I'm Billy Pierre. I'm Umtlagatmf in Soto, which is basically Anishinaabe, on unceded Coast Salish territories in what is known as Vancouver, BC. I'm 31 years old. It's 2008 right now. Gonna be 2009 pretty quick. I got involved in the Native struggle back in 95. That was just after Gustafson happened here in BC. And Gustafson was a Tsleil-Waututh struggle, it was an armed struggle. It was the last, I don't think it's the last armed struggle in Canada. It was one of the last, though, the second last one, and it took place on Tsleil-Waututh territory up in Hundred Mile House. That was over unceded territories. These Tsleil-Waututh people wouldn't leave this piece of land that was actually a part of their traditional territory. That kind of brought to surface, or actually what happened was the provincial government basically gave orders to shoot to kill the native people that were there, and there's about a dozen of them. No one died, but it was pretty intense. It was a very violent RCMP campaign, and the military provided them with equipment. Everyone got out alive, and that was good. A good friend of mine was in it, and she was 14 years old at the time, and she was pregnant, so I guess that just goes to show how violent Canada is to natives, and everyone saw that. And I guess back in 1990, when things heated up over Oka, over the golf course out in Haudenosaunee territory, Canada was so supportive. Well, not Canada, but Canadians, you know, there was a lot of native pride, a lot of people who didn't identify with natives all of a sudden had identified as native or as having native ancestry. It brought a lot of people together because a lot of natives, stood up to support, these Mohawk people that were, under fire. And it just, it brought a lot of native pride to everyone. And so when Gustafson happened, it came out in the public eventually, but the RCMP did a smear campaign. So it was extremely racist. Watching the news, a lot of people were ashamed. A lot of non-natives were a lot of people were just disgusted with the native people. When I saw the news, I was just new. I'm like, okay, the news is targeting Native people and they're being racist. And I was 18 years old watching this, and I could just see it, and I knew that it was all bullshit, that wasn't what was going on. So by September 1995, I met this group called the Urban Native Youth Coalition, and their big thing was when Natives leave their reserves, it's they're forgotten. They don't get any funding to go to schools, they don't get any support whatsoever, and you end up in the city and you have no support, no nothing, and a lot, it's your family, everyone just forgets you, and, it's really difficult, and a lot of people end up in the skids, a lot of people end up with drug addictions, you don't have the support of your whole family, and a lot of the issues of the Urban Native Youth Coalition, a lot of their concerns was they wanted to build up the political power, because all the natives, I can't even remember how much now, I think half the natives, I think, are under 25, and most natives live off-reserve, so Urban Native Youth Coalition was all about building our political strength. It's, we just met and stuff and hung out, and it was pretty cool. We just, get to hang out with, other native youth. And so I was 18 when I was a part of this, and then I guess they went to probably some sort of AFN youth conference, and then they met the first chapter of Native Youth Movement, and that was the very first one, and apparently they never organized under any name, but they were together since 1990, which coincidentally happened, they got together after Ganasetake and Ganawage after Oka, the second chapter got together after Gustafson. But we met them, and they just decided to call themselves Native Youth Movement, so we became the second Native Youth Movement chapter, and we're in Vancouver. So NYM, I hung out with them for a while, and then I got involved in other things, because they weren't really doing too much. We weren't really doing that much, and I didn't really know how to help out anyway. We really relied on a couple of the older guys, for direction and all that. And they were young, so they wouldn't always show up to the meetings, and we didn't really do very much. Late 1996, my sister Nina Pierre and I, we got a $10,000 grant, and we didn't apply for it or anything, but I was working at this environmental organization, and someone had written a grant, and they were busy, they had a job they liked, so it was open up for anyone, and I took it, and me and my sister started Red War magazine. Because of Urban Native Youth Coalition, or because of Native Youth Movement and their political, they wanted to build up the political voice of, or political force of Native youth in the city, we decided this magazine will be for Native youth in Vancouver. It'll be uncensored, No one will have any control over it whatsoever. Whatever youth want to say, they'll get to say it. We just raised hell, man. It was so fun. We really raised hell because a lot of people were like you go to a Native Youth conference and people would be like, oh, Native Youth have so much opportunities today, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we talk about things like suicide, substance abuse, you know, we talk about things like land and, you know, we talk about like the impacts of residential school and like the 60s child scoop had on us. And it was really powerful. We talk about racism. Like, this is what it's like. This is how I get treated here in the city. This is how people treat me, you know. They treat me like shit. You just publish it just the way people say it and write it. And people got really angry, and we loved that. We thought that was so great. And just at the time that initially no one would write for us, and it was really hard to find anyone interested. People told us later they thought we're just going to print something out that was just 8.5, like basically printed sheets, you know, like just something stapled together, black and white. And we came out with a magazine. People were pretty excited. But the very first people who wrote for us was a Native Youth Movement. And they only agreed to write for us if we joined NYM. So we were like, okay, we'll do it. And everyone wrote. And it was like, and because everyone was radical, like the whole, like that just set the tone for Redwire. Just right before, right around the time Redwire, the first issue of Redwire came out, a Native Youth Movement did their first real action that was taking over the BC Treaty, I think it was the BC Treaty Office, I don't know, BC Treaty Commission Office, something like that. NYM became the, you know, the official opposition to the BC Treaty process here, and Redwire came out right at that time, and holy man, Redwire and NYM together, we just raised hell. It was so cool. It was really awesome. It was so great. It felt so empowering. We were all so proud of ourselves. That happened, and that was pretty cool. NYM was pretty good. We're still really reliant on the guys, and they just show up once in a while whenever they felt like it, and there's a couple of guys, and they weren't really very reliable. By that point, my older sister and a couple of my friends, their older sisters got involved, and that's when the Vancouver Native Youth Movement chapter became very matriarchal, which is our way anyway. That's how things go out in the West here. Like, we're very matrilineal, very matriarchal. We had our older bossy sisters telling us what to do, and we just listened, and it was pretty cool. Like, I grew, you know, into who I am now. A lot of it was shaped by NYM and by like these older girls or older women, and they're in their, like, by that point they're already in their mid-20s. We were pretty young, and we'd party and stuff. Anytime they saw anything, any, like, say a guy like trying to beat up his girlfriend or something, they just jump right in, man, and they just stop them. They'd even pick fights, and, you know, I either had to just stand and watch my sister pick a fight with like a big giant guy or several even, and either I'd have to stand and watch her, I'd have to help her. So of course I was going to help her. It just became commonplace. And that's, you know, those are my values today, is if a woman's in a violent situation, unlike what everyone else seems to do, I'm not going to turn a blind eye. And I may not pick a fight, but I'll try to do what I can to diffuse the situation, or up to any point, whatever help she needs, whatever it takes to diffuse the situation, I'll do that. That's what we all need to be doing, but people don't see that, or they don't do that, and I don't understand, because everyone out there needs help, they need support, and I don't know how you can watch something go down that's really messed up. But people do it all the time, and it's just, it's inhumane. I'd say Vancouver Native Youth Movement chapter, out of all the NYM chapters, is definitely the most matriarchal. My belief of that, I think there's like a woman warrior spirit here in the West Coast. I think you can see it, and I think like in Canada, Native women are just under brutal attack. I think that's all what colonization really relies on, brutally repressing women. Out here, you know, you think of the missing murdered women and how many of them are Native. You know, there's like a really strong, potent woman warrior spirit here, and like those murders really reflect that. And when you see the movement here, like the Indigenous movement here, like, you know, the women are really strong. So that's something really strong, and that was something really wonderful in the Vancouver Native Youth Movement chapter that I haven't quite seen to that level in anywhere else. But yeah, we became anti-treaty. One of our campaigns was also around a forced child apprehension. During the Mi'kmaq struggle, the lobster wars, you know, the Mi'kmaq struggle to fish lobster whenever they wanted, we supported them. We were also involved in Chiem, in the Palau struggle to fish when they wanted. We're involved in a lot of different things, and it was pretty cool. One of the last actions that NOM really did really potently was for Leonard Peltier, and that was when, I think it was 2001, maybe? 2001, when Leonard Peltier went up for clemency. He was applying for clemency so that he'd get released from prison. That was during Bill Clinton's last few months as president. And he was denied that clemency, but before he was denied, Leonard Peltier was extradited. When he was caught, he was wanted for the murder of two FBI agents that took place in 1975. He went on the run and was caught up in Alberta, near Hinton, Alberta, in a place called Small Boys Camp. He was caught up there, and then he was sent to Vancouver, and he went through an extradition process, and he was illegally extradited from Vancouver with false testimonies. That's why he was extradited. It was, like, totally illegal, total fabricated stories and everything. And so Vancouver has a lot of history around Leonard Peltier and the American Indian Movement. Vancouver is kind of a hot spot for his clemency. Like, you know, we wanted to show support too. So we, you know, it's the first time we really learned much about anything about AIM was around Leonard Peltier. And we took over the park. We camped in the park for 4 days and had a sacred fire. And it was just so beautiful. It was so powerful. It was wintertime. It was really fun. It was really good. That was one of our last actions. We did something in 2003. We had one more youth conference, and that youth conference actually was around, we had that one out in Chiem, which is Palau territory, and those people were struggling against some logging. There was an unwanted ski resort proposal. Also during that conference, we went to another Leonard Peltier rally that took place at the border, at the Peace Arch Park. And that was one of the last NYM gatherings, Vancouver NYM gatherings.